Well, then by headlining right straight down the line of a biological mental science, we did suddenly find ourselves capable of changing the intelligence quotient of an individual, something that's never been done before, observably, and found ourselves capable of curing many psychosomatic illnesses in people which had never been touched before. Miracles could happen, and that's the first time anybody'd reported any miracles for an awful long time. By monitoring the mind, we got changes in the body. Well, this is very curious. Well, but there was a biological mental science. Now, as we started to continue our studies, observations, and so forth, what happened? We, of course, walked over in the direction of the spiritual side of man and walked over in the direction of the physical side of man. In other words, we merely broadened the biological concept in its two component parts, and we all of a sudden found ourselves looking at this thing called biological science as a combination of the spirit and the physical universe. You see that? We just broadened that, and the next thing you know, we have two component parts which themselves combined form this third part. And so we got the theta mesh theory. And that was really the first big advance from that first approach of looking at the cells and looking at the bodies and saying, well, look, they're trying to survive, and therefore this is what the mind is trying to do. So you see what happened there. We had theta. Theta was, in physical universe terms, a nothingness, something that had no motion. It didn't have wavelength. It didn't have any place in space. It didn't have any space. It didn't have matter, mass, had none of these things, and yet seemed to be capable of the production of space, and actually energy and matter seemed to be capable of these, but it wasn't itself these things. It was truly a nothingness, and this nothingness with these potentials we called theta, merely because that is the Greek symbol for thought, and said, look, we have this thing called theta operating upon the physical universe, which produces this biological substance. Aha. Now, what are the three parts of man? That part of him which is nothing, that part of him which is totally physical, combined together, as far as the body is concerned, to be that part of him which is biological. Now, is man composed of these three things? Well, he sure is. When he's dead, what remains there is totally physical. Well, man's long observed this. Let's turn it around and look at it the other way. When you subtract his body, what have you got? And this has really been a tremendous thing in terms of cases and results and everything else, because we started subtracting his body. Instead of subtracting him from his body, really what we started doing is taking a look at him as he existed independent of a body. We found out the body was totally physical, but as long as he was, or a life unit, there are two life units in a body, as long as this life unit was connected to this totally physical thing, you had an animate biological thing. And then we've got, of course, the spiritual and the physical side of the individual, and we have gotten up along the line of our science until we can look at each one independently. We have taken biology so far apart now that we can look at the spirit as an entirety and at the physical beingness as an entirety, and we can also look at the biological combination as an entirety. So that's what we're studying. We're studying three things. We're studying the physical side of existence, matter, energy, space, time. We're sure studying it, because we got brand new definitions for it. A fellow came down here the other day. We talk about how new some of these definitions are. Chap came down here the other day, a wing angel. And he said he was up at one of the big atomic plants talking to some of the engineers. And he talked to this nuclear physicist for a little while, and the fellow says, well, very reservedly, if you do have something, you'd have a definition for space. And Wing said very promptly, yes, we do. We have a definition for space. Space is a viewpoint of dimension. And the nuclear physicist sat there for a moment, and all of a sudden a kind of a stunned look came in his eye. And he rushed out and grabbed the phone, and he shut down the experiment number 7. They were about to blow the plant apart. All of a sudden, one of his own experiments became meaningful. They'd been operating without a definition of nothing and without a definition of space. All right. Over here in the field of religion, did we clarify anything? Oh, yes, we sure did. Everybody's been rushing around in their robes and so forth, saying, save your soul, save your soul. Now, look here, fella, you got to save your soul. Now, you got to believe in something in order to save your soul, and you'd better save your soul. Nobody ever thought of asking them, well, where is my soul? Is it over there? Or do I carry it in my pocket? Or what is this thing you're talking about? You're talking about something, certainly, because it has a name. Where is it? What is it? Well, this statement, save your soul, obfuscated the entire problem. Because man is his own soul. How can you save your soul? You can't. You are your own soul. Weird, but you are. You can't save your own soul. You can yourself back out away from a body and take a look at it. Now, what we call you, evidently, down through the years, we mean by that this biological combination of the physical and the spiritual. And that's you. You have brown hair, and you wear shoes, and you are a man, or you are a woman, or you do certain things, you smile a certain way, you have eyes of a certain color. In other words, this you-ness, you see, has been founded home as the combination of the physical and spiritual, which is itself a visible biological manifestation. Well, is it quite true? Well, when you tell a fellow, be 3 feet back of your head, believe me, he recognizes that he is himself. But he also recognizes, first, that he doesn't have his whole personality. Why doesn't he? Because he associates his whole personality with an alter ego which consists of matter. Also, these cells have independent life in them. And here he's really, when you say you, a total package of life. When he's 3 feet back of his head, he is unable to muster up a personality because he's so dependent upon the physical part of the thing to muster up this personality. So he feels kind of personality-less. Personality is still parked there in his head. Well, you've done a tremendous thing in just finding out that you could say to 50% of the people you meet, be 3 feet back of your head, and the fellow says, for heaven's sakes, I am. Now, this was awfully tough. It's only tough because it was very simple. I've been talking about save your soul, which, of course, put a red herring on the whole track. The whole track had a red herring on it. What was it? Your soul is over there. You know, your soul is something you carry in a hip pocket, not you. Well, the second we recognize that a man's soul is himself, all the life which he will ever have, really, as far as an intimate contact with life itself, is himself, and that is a unit which is capable of producing space, is capable of producing energy, and is capable of producing matter. And that is the individual. We shouldn't say the body's life unit. But when we first get him out, he doesn't have any real recognition of himself, usually as a personality. It's only after he looks around a little bit and recognizes that he can have a personality, and this whole thing called personality is built on a lot of postulates that he can take his personality onto himself. In other words, while exteriorized, which is to say a soul without a body, while the body still lives, he yet can have a personality, and he yet can experience joy and pain and so forth. Now, here is the individual. This individual is immortal. But his immortality, of course, can be on a very gradient scale of comfort. He can be mortal very uncomfortably and rather blind, or he can be immortal, clear-seeing, and able to take care of himself. And we find out that this individual, you, evidently go all along the track of life, but that the shock of loss of one of these bodies, while you're attributing all your personality to the body, the shock of its loss is sufficient that it wipes out your memory concerning it. Because you say, well, the body remembers. Man believes this. He believes that the body does. He's remembering. It does his eating for him, doesn't it? And it does its talking for him. Well, therefore, it does its remembering. And an individual with a little drill begins to pick up memory on the whole track. But completely aside from these things, we're getting off into controversial things. We do have here these component parts then in a preclair. We have first this unit, which is capable of the production of energy, which unit is alive and is aware, and we would call this an awareness unit. It's also a space energy production unit. And this is the individual, and when you've subtracted that, you actually do have the individual, because with a little bit of drill, he can have returned to him the personality which he ordinarily attributes to himself plus his body. But this is a matter of postulates. But we do have this, and we can separate this individual from his body. This is a fantastic thing and is actually a very major discovery. Here we had first this biological mental approach. The next thing we had right on top of that, we came along with this theta mess theory that there is a nothingness up against an allness, and these two in combination make this biological phenomena. And the next thing above that is all of a sudden we've got the pure spiritual side of existence staring at us there. We actually can separate an individual from his body. Well, these are quite some discoveries, by the way, to have a concatenation of that character. But look at the pattern. These are the inevitable discoveries, aren't they? Once we take a rear view of the whole thing, we find quite easily that naturally we discover more. Once we started looking at it, you couldn't help but discover more about the physical universe. And once you started looking at it, instead of just believing in it or protecting your soul or something, you'd certainly discover more about the spiritual side of things. And of course, naturally, then you discover an awful lot of things about the biological side of things. It's a combination of the two. There are the parts with which you're working. Now, the primary difference between the physical and the spiritual side. You see, it's not fair to say mental side. Where is mental part? Biological. Biological mental. That's the center pin. The only real phrase which fits it at all is what man considers spiritual. That phrase fits it much more aptly than any other, but of course he really hasn't had a phrase for it. We've had to put a new word in there, thetan, a symbol to represent a missing hole in the language. Because spiritual, he means many other things by spiritual. But we say over here the spiritual side of existence and the physical side of existence have a primary difference between them, an enormous difference between them. One thing which you will recognize instantly. Instantly. The physical side of existence does not get ideas. You see that? I mean, there's an immediate difference there. Now, over here on the spiritual side of existence, you've got ideas. And over here on the physical side of existence, you have no ideas at all. Oh, some chap who just got his magna cum laude or something at MIT might try to say to you, well, look at these big electronic brains. They get ideas. Oh, nonsense. What he's defining as an idea is a datum. An idea is not a datum. But the funny part of it is that not one of those electronic machines ever had taken out of it a datum which was not put into it. The physicist believes totally that you cannot originate anything new. You can't originate any ideas. There are no ideas to originate. Everything has been originated in the past. And as you get the mental index of people and you draw their mental index, you find out that the worse off they are, the more thoroughly they believe that everything is already thought up, and that cause is in the past, and there is no cause or originality in the present. And physics has subscribed to this almost 100% as a theory and a philosophy. You can't originate anything, conservation of energy, all these other things. We have ideas as the primary difference there, and so when we get into the subject of control at all, we would get whether an individual is alive or not, it would be whether or not he could get ideas. I mean, there's really the sole test of whether he's alive or not. Can he get ideas? We say somebody is dead. He's in a cataleptic trance. He's lying there. He's barely breathing. His heart is barely beating. And we say, well, is that individual alive or dead? Well, he's biologically still alive because his blood is still flowing, if sluggishly, through his body. But from a spiritual standpoint, we would have to say, well, this person is very, very low on the biochemical band, but he certainly isn't getting any ideas, is he? You could just say a person is able, is alive as long as he gets ideas. And when he doesn't get ideas anymore, he's not alive. As a matter of fact, when you were very young, you had lots of hopes, dreams, aspirations, ambitions, and you wanted to go through life and do this and do that. Those were ideas, and you had lots of ideas, and people came along and said, you shouldn't get this idea, you shouldn't get that idea, you shouldn't be so wild about this, you should think more soberly about this whole thing, and you should dedicate yourself to just one line of attack. What you should become is maybe a good cook or something like that, you know. Hold yourself down to one thing and you won't get these wild notions and so forth. And so you foolishly bought this philosophy. Wasn't any reason to buy it except that it just seemed like a philosophy that seemed to be fairly true. You wanted to get ahead in life. And you know, you didn't feel as alive. And when you ran totally out of goals and ideas and ambitions and all of this covered under the heading of ideas, concepts, when you totally ran out of them, you didn't have any future at all. You actually would dwell more in the past than you would in the future. Why? There are ideas in the past. You had ideas once upon a time. In short, an individual is as alive as he has ideas. He's as aware as he has ideas. Doesn't mean he has to hectically go on getting ideas, ideas, ideas. But it also doesn't mean that every idea has to be put into action. That's the way the MEST universe operates as a big trap. It says, look at here, you better not get an idea without putting it into action. Who said so? Now, when you walked out, when you were 3 or 4 years old, and you walked out and looked at the morning, and you saw just a little bit of dew on the rose bushes and so forth, boy, that was a bright world. Whee, just blindingly bright. Fresh, clear, startling, adventurous. Well, you saw the world because you could get ideas. And later on, you walk out, you take a look at it. Nah. Well, if you checked yourself up during those two periods, you find out as a little kid, boy, could you get ideas. You wouldn't have to believe in your own ideas at all. It wasn't necessary to do. But you could know that they were there and put them there and, quote, believe in them long enough to have a future and perception and so forth. You'd say, well, now the billy goat Gruff is just on the other side of the porch. It's okay. So there's a billy goat on the other side of the porch. And the black knight is about to charge us, and here I stand in my white armor about to slaughter him. Ideas. World full of action, actually. None of it put into practice. A little bit later on, why, you had to have a gun instead of your thumb and forefinger. You had to have an actual gun bought down at the drugstore for $1.98. It was no longer good enough to point your finger at somebody and twitch your thumb and say, you're dead. He'd say, I am not dead. But if you had a gun, why, maybe he'd say, well, I guess I'm not dead. You started to acquire objects in order to back up your ideas. Actually, no more fatal course exists. When you find a person well along to where he isn't getting ideas anymore, he has to have things before he can do things. He'll think in terms of have. He's got to have this, and he's got to have that. And when he gets them all laid out, then he can do something. That isn't the way it runs. It runs from the idea through doingness to havingness. And if an individual has to acquire in order to do, he finds himself almost incapable of going from havingness back to doingness, because doingness is a lighter, more airy thing. It has more ideas associated in it than havingness. Now get what havingness is. Havingness is a totally fixed idea. A desk is a codified, solidified idea. See, it is a desk. That's a fixed idea proven with matter and energy. And a person who hasn't any desk there at all doesn't even have to have a mock-up to get an idea. And all you want a person to do in therapy is to be able to regain his ability to have ideas and to change the ideas which he's continuing with. He actually doesn't even have to change these ideas if he can get lots of ideas. He's run into a scarcity of ideas. He's fixed them down into too many things. So the scarcity of ideas is registered in the fact that everything is pretty solid. He gets ideas. As long as he gets ideas, he's all right, but now his ideas are all fixed. He has begun to echo the physical universe. He has begun to take dictation from the physical universe. An individual who is himself capable of the production of enormous numbers of ideas, capable of creating and destroying, is asked to survive by echoing only those things he perceives. He can only duplicate what he sees. He can only act like what he sees. Original idea? No, he can't have that. So you get, actually, the happiness, the sanity, all these other things. We have a gradient scale, which is an interesting and a simple gradient scale. It goes up here from the total spiritual all the way down the line to the total physical. And if we take points on this scale, in other words, if we pull biology apart and stretch it up here into the total spiritual side and the total material side down here, we find out that an individual at the top has enormous fluidity. He does not need any space. He can create space. He doesn't really need any energy or anything like that. But in order to produce some randomity, in order to produce some action, excitement, existence, he has this space. He produces some space. He produces some energy. Now he more and more holds on to and connects with space and energy, objects, and so forth. And the more he has of these, and the more he's dedicated to them, the more he is trying to make them survive as objects and forms, the further down this scale he goes. Well, the optimum point's at about 20, you'd say, about halfway between. Well, that's true enough. But when he starts drifting away from this point, which is in the middle, down towards zero, assigning this the arbitrary of 40 over here to the spiritual side, 20 at the biological side, when he starts going over here, he can no longer make this mental, biological object function. He has lost his control of it. He begins to feel very sad indeed. He's lost his ability to control it totally. He can't control it. He can't really keep it out of danger. He can't change it. He can't heal it or alter it. And he's on his way south. He's coasting right on down here toward the physical universe, and he finally winds up as a physicist. That's right. And he gets the philosophy of a physicist. Actually, if we consider that the physical universe is God's universe and is built by God, the most religious person in it would be a nuclear physicist. He studies and examines God's postulates all day long. You might say, as far as the physical universe is concerned, the only really godly man would be a physicist, because he's the only one that is totally dedicated to following the rules, regulations of God. We look at these boys and we find out that they're in awfully bad shape. They have agreed thoroughly to the fact that they have to echo and mimic only physical things. That's very degraded. They get down to a degradation where they have no conscience, really, about making an atom bomb. No conscience about it or regulating it or anything of the sort. They've just neglected all their responsibilities. I'm just joking when I say that most godly people, because those people today have really no concept of the idea of God or spirituality. They have had to drift away from this, they think, because of their own practical considerations. But these two points are very wide apart, and the sanest end of it happens to be the totally spiritual. And the maddest end of it, really, is the totally physical. But after we've gone entirely through the totally physical, what do we come out upon? We come out where Sir James Jean and other great physical philosophers of yesterday have finally emerged. True enough, they were the most godly men in the world, because when they wound up all of their work, when they wrote their greatest book, they inevitably put in as a last line the fact that all of their studies had led to a complete conclusion that there must be something called God. They've gone all the way through the band of nuclear physics. When they've done that, they wind up on the side that there must be a God. And they have assigned all ability to create space to another being. Where do we find religion? Where really is this thing called religion, then? Is it up here on the spiritual side? It isn't, is it? It's down here on the physical side. Funny. But that's the way it behaves, too. Now, somebody comes along, exteriorizes you. You recognize that you are something which is separate from the body, something which can control a body, something which can use a body, heal a body, that you can have to do with other organisms, other bodies. You recognize this, you have recognized a great truth. Just recognizing that is a great truth, and you've suddenly moved well up from the biological mental strata over here toward a real spiritual strata. Now, in spite of the fact that we found religion way over here on the spiritual side of the ledger, and we said man must have some sympathy with religion, we didn't find this spirit that we discovered to have much in common with religious teachings or practices. We didn't find, for instance, very much about this in religion. Because religion talks about your soul and talks about the wrath of God. And the wrath of God and the wrath of God and the wrath of God and the wrath of God. And God will love you if you don't make him mad at you. And so forth. And we just don't find that when we move over here onto the spiritual side. We find out that you are you, and you are capable of producing space and energy, and you are capable of a rather definite freedom, and that you evidently have an enormous potentiality for immortality. And we look around in vain for some God to shake the hand of. And we find out that as far as really God is concerned, God then must be the spiritual agreement of all of us. And our search for that Thetan in the people to whom we talk. Everybody knows that there's a nothingness. He knows it really, instinctively. He feels it, that there's a nothingness in this person to whom he's talking, you see. And he looks at their face, but he senses their spirit. And so he knows that there is some sort of a nothingness in existence. After all, if he's talked to 1,000 people, he sort of sensed that there's 1,000. He's talked to kind of 1,000 of these Thetans. He just feels this instinctively. But sooner or later, he's going to agree very solidly that there is some kind of a hidden influence around. Well, there sure is. There's the Thetan. People often go around being certain there's something hidden in the actions of other people. Well, there sure is. There's a Thetan. Real hidden. It's not visible in terms of physical universe energy. Well, if we were less able to reduce all this to experimental proof, we would have to walk very softly. But we don't have to walk very softly because we are today turning out the most definite therapeutic results which man has turned out using the very principles which I just talked to you about. And these are the principles we are operating with. You have to know something about the physical universe. You have to know something about the biological mental picture, but you certainly better know something about the spiritual side of the picture because it's the only causative element you're dealing with. The other two elements, the biological and the physical, are effects. The most total effect there is the physical universe. So you're actually studying cause in the Thetan over to effect as the physical universe. And that is the band of the knowledge and the data which you're handling with Dianetics.